So Travis Wernick has spoken here at Many Rivers before, has performed at Many Rivers before. It looks as if we'll have more performance and more speech tonight. Yeah. He is, of course, writing his book, which is on the intersection of dreams, sound, and the imaginal arts. I don't know if he'll be talking about that tonight or not.
A little bit, yes.
Excellent. So I look forward to hearing about that, but we'll also be, it sounds like, at least getting back to basics a little bit, how dreams help and why we work with them. Please join me in welcoming Travis Wernick.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome to you all. It's good to be here again. In the interest of starting in a certain fashion, my work is largely composed of the intersection between dreams and sound, and part of the sound is the invocation of the spoken word. So when I begin a talk like this, I like to do it in a contemporary fashion, but honoring the old ways. So one of the old ideas is to call in the spirit. So I would like to call in the spirit of dreams and dreaming to be with us tonight through a spoken word poem by David White. And the name of the poem, some of you might be familiar with it, is What to Remember When Waking. In that first hardly noticed moment, in that first hardly noticed moment in which you wake, coming back to this life from that other, more secret, movable, and frighteningly honest place where everything began, there is a small opening into the day which closes the moment you begin your plans. What you can plan is too small for you to live, and what you can live wholeheartedly will make plans enough for the vitality hidden in your sleep. To be human is to become visible, carrying what is hidden as a gift for others. To remember the other world in this world is to live in your true inheritance. You are not a troubled guest. You are not a troubled guest on this earth, an accident amidst other accidents. You were invited from another and greater night than the one from which you have just emerged. Looking now through the slanting light coming through the morning window towards the mountain presence of everything that can be. What urgency calls you to your one love? What shape waits in the seed of you to grow and spread its branches against a future sky? Is it waiting in the fertile sea, out beyond the trees, past the house, or in the life that you can imagine for yourself? Not bad, huh? This is it, and of course I can say that because it's somebody else's poem. This poem has become quite emblematic of the work that I do because of its beautiful reminders to open up to. The poet, David, called it the other world. I would call it maybe the dream world. And so this is a call to awareness, something about that rich, ripe, and vital moment, right when we wake, right when we waken, recognizing that we could move very quickly towards, and I do this myself on most days, towards making plans and figuring out, okay, what needs to happen here and what needs to happen now. At the same time, in order to make space for our dreams, we want to cultivate and create and honor a certain kind of space that allows for another opening, an opening to the world of dreams and dreaming. And of course, this is my work. I work as a professional dream worker. I'm an ordained Unitarian Universalist minister, and I also do a lot of work with the shamanic arts. And I have a private practice here in Sebastopol, and I've been doing group work with dreams for 20 years now, and I've been facilitating and hosting my own groups for at least 5 years. And I also do online dream work interpretation for a major online dream work interpretation service. So I see a lot of dreams in my daily life, and I can almost always trust that if I don't have my own issues will come out and up when I work with other people's dreams. And this is really at the heart of the approach that I take towards working with dreams. I'm what is called a projective style dream worker, which is kind of a $20 way of saying that the work that I do with dreams is based on the understanding and the notion that we all have a natural tendency to project meaning, thoughts, feelings, and ideas that we aren't quite yet aware of, or maybe we're in the process of remembering them from inside ourselves out onto objects in what we call the outer world, onto other people, places, animals, plants, events, and so forth. So the work that I do is largely based in the sharing of dreams, which is a very old practice and has been something that many, many cultures throughout time have done. Many, many cultures throughout time, and it still happens today. People gather in the morning during the early part of the day and will share their dreams. And this is really an effort to be and become aware of the things that we might normally miss because of the fast-paced activity of our daily lives, especially here as people living in the Western world, where it seems like the clock keeps getting faster, or at least it does to me. You know, the pace of life can feel very rapid. So, essentially what I hope to do tonight, I see a lot of new faces, and what I would like to do tonight is to present to you the most helpful basic skills and understandings from my perspective and based on my work with dreamers for over 20 years, in the hope and the trust that I will be able to provide something that is of use to you as a dreamer and as a human being. So at various points during the evening, at some point I will open it up for questions and for comments. And so I'm viewing this as a conversation between us that we're able to have here tonight. And to begin with, what I'd like to do is make some more general statements and comments about how I see dreams and dreaming and how I understand them and why I think it's important for us to work with them. It's true in my experience that dreams have been deeply devalued and dismissed in our culture. And apart from a kind of psychotherapeutic understanding, you know, generally speaking, that's where people tend to go when we think about our dreams, at least in the mainstream culture. Now I recognize I'm sitting here in Minnie Rivers Books and Tea, and that there are probably some very seasoned folks in the audience. Yeah, I know that for a fact, because I know a couple of you quite well. So I think it's helpful to remember and to note that dreams, in a very real sense, and I can say this, but it's also going to be of great use and value to each of us if there's a way that we can experience this tonight. Dreams round us out. They help to complete us as beings. In other words, one of the main primary functions of dreams and dreaming, near as I can tell, is to give us that which we don't know that we don't know. That's part of it. Dreams' job, the job of the dreams, is to tell us what we're not aware of that we're not aware of. And the question comes up, how can we know what it is that we don't know if we don't know it? And in my experience, one of the great services of the dreams is that they provide a reliable, accurate, and trustworthy view onto those very issues, plus all the things that I already do know about myself. But really, part of the great value of working with dreams is the way that they open up a view, a vista, onto an unseen layer of reality. I don't really need to be shown the things that I already know about myself again by the dream as much as I need to be shown the things that I don't yet know about myself. So I want to share a quote from Carl Jung, which is on topic, and it comes from this wonderful book that I just discovered called The Dream and Its Amplification. Clearly a Jungian title, if any of you are familiar with Jungian dream work. And it basically, it's a compilation from various contemporary Jungian psychological practitioners around the work with dreams. And this particular quote comes from Jung. And he says, "The dream the dream is a little hidden door in the innermost and most secret recesses of the soul. opening into that cosmic night, which was psyche long before there was any ego consciousness, and which will remain psyche no matter how far our ego consciousness extends. In dreams, we put on the likeness of that universal, truer, more eternal man and woman dwelling in the darkness of primordial night. There, he and she is still the whole, and the whole is in him and her, indistinguishable from nature and bare of all egohood. It is from these all-uniting depths that the dream arises. The standout quality in that passage for me, as regards the evening tonight, more and more as I work with dreams, I have a sense that their job is to tell us about our nature, the nature of our nature. As James Hollis would put it, another well-known Jungian writer, he would say, it has to do with the nature of our nature naturing. So it's an active experience. The experience of dreams, apart from the view that states that they are psychological or psychotherapeutic artifacts, dreams are experiences that we have in a surrendered state while we're asleep. So it's not just, in my view, a production of the mind or a psychological tidbit that I can work with and look at later. It's an actual experience that I have. Sometimes we even have dreaming experiences while we're awake or semi-awake. So it's important to note that too. And I think this is really exciting and important, particularly at a point in time when we seem to be faced, at least from my view, with this enormous ecological challenge and crisis, what we call the ecological crisis, climate change. The dreams at this time, in my experience as I work with them, are also coming through to remind us that there are creative, imaginative ways of responding to the issues that we've become overly familiarized through our daily activities and practices and habits. So, in addition to the dream being a portion of our own nature, naturing, dreams operate on many multiple levels at the same time. Dreams operate on a level of mental reality. Dreams also operate on a level of feeling and heartful reality. Dreams also have a physical-like quality to them. We could call it a subtle physical quality. And dreams also speak in the language of intuition. One of the favorite things about my work that I love the most is when I have the opportunity to help people dispel misconceptions that we may have built up throughout the course of time around our dreams and what they might be seeking to show us. You know, as an example of the devaluing of dreams, it's pretty much true that in any culture today, in any mainstream culture around the world, to call another person a dreamer is to call them a bad name. You know, it means, yeah, Travis, he's a dreamer. He's got his heads up in the clouds. He has no idea what's going on down here on Earth. So, along with this devaluing, there's a potential for a reclaiming. And I really feel, in my work, what I see a lot is that people come to the dream work thinking, well, I had this dream, you know, I had this disgusting, nasty, scary, frightening dream, and I want to have good dreams. You know, I want to get rid of these disgusting, nasty, frightening dreams. That's a worthy pursuit. And at the same time, in my experience, the nastier, the uglier, the scarier, the better. That bad dreams, so-called bad dreams, are really coming to tell us something important that we deeply need to know. And that also has to do with, in Jungian terms, we could say, the quest for wholeness. And as Jung himself said, I'd rather be whole than good. And I'm voting for that ticket. myself. So, dreams tell us reliably about the future, about our psycho-spiritual well-being and health. They also tell us about our physical health and well-being, And I sort of thought, in the interest of the evening tonight, that it might be beneficial and also kind of exciting for folks, because physical health is definitely a strong focus in our culture. Are people aware of the fact that dreams speak to physical health and well-being, and that they serve that level of our existence? Yeah? No? I see some nodding yeses. Okay. Okay. Some no's. Okay. Very good. Well, instead of keeping this in the theoretical, let me share an example. I think it's good to share examples because it sort of grounds this stuff out. In one of my regular ongoing dream groups, a woman came to the group and she reported a dream. She's an older woman, and in the dream, she says, I find myself outside a beautiful older house. I decide to walk in. It's daytime. I note that the beauty of the construction of the house, such as the woodwork and the fleshing, is of note. I go through the house. There is not much inside of this house. There's no furniture, except I walk into the dining room and I see a man set up against the back wall. The man who's set up against the back wall has a desk, and I know that I will be selling things. That he will be selling things to me. That he's making an effort to sell things to me. So I walk up to him in the dream. Now you'll notice I've taken the first person while telling the dream, okay? Because I'm imagining this dream as my own as I say it. So, the dreamer walks up to this back table and greets the man, and suddenly the man becomes quiet and he looks and points at the wall behind him, and he has a look on his face as if to suggest that something's not quite right. The dreamer says at this point she walks away from the table and she goes outside, and she notices on the wall before doing so that there's something there, and it's barely discernible. She can't even really describe it. But she knows there's something on the wall. And she decides to walk out the back door. And as she does so, she walks out onto a mountain plain where there are cabins set up. And there are waves that are coming and blasting and rolling over these cabins out behind the house. And the dreamer wakes up from the dream. So we did lots of really interesting work with this dream. And most of it was based on the psycho-spiritual level or wavelength. We got almost to the close of the work, and I was sitting there thinking, this is a group of about 8 people, wow, I wonder if this dream could be speaking to physical health and well-being. So I said, you know, if this were my dream, I know that it's true, and this is a little tidbit of information if you don't already know it that you might want to make note of. When houses appear in dreams, it's almost always, if not always, a reliable indicator that the house is a metaphor and a symbol for the body, because we travel in bodies in this lifetime. When I leave the house or the home, I'm in this home. So I said, if this were my dream, there's something going on with this wall in the dining room. Something's not quite right. Something's off with the physical environment. And that's another really reliable indicator in the dreams. When something's off with the physical environment, it's not dependable, or there's something kind of wrong with it, then we can suspect and ask the question, is it possible that the dream is seeking to tell me something about my physical health here? And is something off? Because the physical reality isn't dependable in the way that I would normally expect it to be. So I said, if this were my dream, I would go to the doctor and I would get checked out if I haven't done that for a while. You know, get a full workup, see what the doctor says. And that's what I do in those kind of instances where I'm picking up some kind of energy like that in the dream. So the dreamer goes away, sees her doctor, comes back to the group. She has this like terrified look on her face, and she says, the doctor told me I have a terminal illness. She said, I'm really glad we worked the dream, but the doctor came back and said, I have a terminal illness, so I'm writing my will, you know. And I said, well, gosh, you know, when I think back to that dream, I'm not so sure about that. And she said, yeah, that's what I was thinking too. So she goes and gets a second opinion. And the second opinion is, well, we don't have any reason to suspect that this is a life-threatening illness here. We're going to run some tests. So they run some tests and they find out, essentially, this person has a mold allergy. So it turns out that there's something not quite right on the wall behind the table that was barely discernible, in part barely discernible because it wasn't quite in the dreamer's conscious awareness. There was something there, just like the energy of our body. Right now, none of us is likely to be very aware at all of what's happening in our bodies as we're here listening and speaking. So, I mean, what a great service of the dream world to the dreamer. Not only did the dream get there before it caused any problems for her in waking life, she was able to go to her doctor. She went through the unfortunate experience of being told that she had a terminal illness, which was, you know, maybe a practice run for later. Hopefully not. But the dream did this service for the dreamer. And dreams are on record as reliably doing this over and over and over again. So it's helpful to know that our dreams can do something that's so practical and so helpful to us, that it can help us even in terms of our physical health and well-being. So I've said quite a bit. What I think I'd like to do is I want to open it up for any questions or comments, anything that has occurred to you so far during the conversation. Anything brewing out there? No? Okay.
Well,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I just very touched by my dream.
Uh huh.
I feel, you know, rather moved by them,
mm-hmm.
and grateful.
Mm-hmm.
And growing in sort of that direction more and more.
Yeah.
That emotionally they are there to really support.
Yeah.
A growth.
Yes.
And I absolutely, you know, I really pay attention to them.
Uh huh. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So, do any thoughts on emotional components of dreams and where? I mean, I'm sure you've got some sort of comments.
Well, it's a very pertinent topic, and it's a very important direction. It's an interesting conversation that myself and one of my colleagues, who happens to be here tonight, have engaged in over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important to give space and attention to the feelings in our dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my own approach probably tends to be a little heavy in terms of a thinking view or a philosophical view, in terms of, you know, the presentation and the way that I actually do the work. Again, as far as I can tell, the interest of the dreams, and this is based on my own dreams and also the dreams of other people that I work with, one of the main functions is to create a whole. So, of course, emotions and feeling are a very critical, important part of that. And what tends to happen is, it's like if people are familiar with typology. Typology is just basically a theory that each of us will tend to have certain strengths and certain weaknesses in terms of how we approach life. So some people will tend to approach life more from an emotional understanding. Other people will approach it more from a thinking form of understanding, or like there's me and I'm an intuitive type, mm-hmm. so I approach it primarily from a place of intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people, you know, like people who build things, carpenters and certain artists, are what we would call in Jungian language sensates, and they really get physical reality. So I think it's really important
mm-hmm.
to also honor the feeling and the emotional piece of the dreams. Yeah. Yes?
In your work with group dreaming or collective dreaming, I'm curious if you are beginning to see or have seen and are continuing to have reinforcements in patterns of collective thinking, and whether or not evoking certain states of presence to create receptivity, deeper receptivities as a group with a focusing on intent for a collective receptivity.
Yes.
That's a lot in that.
Yeah, sure. Well, let me make a comment based on my experience around that. We don't, in the group dream work, we don't set any clear intention other than to share our dreams and to learn from them. However, in the experience of doing so, what I have seen over time, almost every time I have a group, which is for one particular group, it's every 2 weeks, we can identify a thread that appears in the first dream and the second dream. That there will be some similarity, some similar quality between both dreams. And as well, we tend to go away from the groups after we've been working together for a while, and we'll have each other in our dreams, and we'll come and bring those dreams to the group. So what seems to happen, I'll give a concrete example. In this past Wednesday's dream group, a dreamer brought a dream. One of the first repeat elements was, in the dream there was an energy of going up, lifting up, and then going over something, and then coming down the other side. That happened in the first dream, and then that also repeated in the second dream. Now, also, this brings up synchronicity, which is the idea that there's some natural cosmic energy that is arising simultaneously, mm-hmm. and that there's meaning to be found in that. In the first dream, the dreamer dreamed of native indigenous peoples that she couldn't, upon awakening, fully remember the clothing of. So some of us were fascinated about figuring out, well, what was the clothing like? So we asked questions and found out that there was a headband involved, and one of the people in the group happens to be a former anthropologist and archaeologist, and he said, that reminds me of the flicker headband of the Pomo tribe here on the coast. And when he said flicker, it touched off something in me, and I remembered 4 hours prior to the group, I'm sitting out back preparing for the group, looking at the bird feeder, and a flicker woodpecker returns for the first time in a couple of months. So I remembered in the dream group, and I said, well, today I happen to have seen a flicker woodpecker, so it's interesting now that we're talking about the flicker headband, mm-hmm. which would be related to that animal energy. So that's a kind of fairly long-winded way of attempting to begin to answer your what I understand to be a quite profound question.
It's sort of the metaphysics of synchronicity.
Yeah,
It's the bridge between the dream world and what we call the real world.
Yes, exactly.
We can wrap our heads around it.
Yeah.
But yet there's more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there always seems to be more. Yeah, especially in this work. Which is great, right? Because then it means, like, it's always to be continued. It's not like the end. It's like, no, there's more. Where this came from? Yeah. Thank you for that question. The other part of what I want to do tonight, I love to talk, in case you haven't noticed. Once I get over that initial hump, but I want to make sure that I provide something of value to each of you here tonight. So what I'd like to do now is, when I come to Many Reavers, for some reason, I like to tell stories. And I am a storyteller, but I'm an amateur storyteller. And something about coming to Many Rivers has always brought the storytelling side out of me. There's a beautiful story that basically knocked on my door and said, you know, Travis, I would like to be told this week at Many Rivers at your talk. So I want to tell this story tonight, and it's in the interest of recognizing the, again, kind of the old ways. You know, in modern culture, in modern American culture, I think, it seems to me that we live with a lot of specialization, you know. There's not a lot of rewards that are given to, you know, Renaissance people, of which I consider myself to be part of that club, you know. Old cultures didn't separate things out. They didn't separate music from ceremony, from dream work, from storytelling. And part of the reason, I think, storytelling, Marie-Louise von Franz, who is another Jungian, one of my faves, good old Marlis, she says in one of her books on fairy tales that as near as she can tell, fairy tales arise out of dreams and dream sharing. That it's like what happens around the water cooler or the town well, that people share their dreams, and then other people say, wow, that's really interesting, and then they tell it again to somebody else, and that slowly, over the course of time, the most important and vital elements are kept and rearranged, and so the story gets retold. True wisdom stories are told and retold again so many times that they must have something in them. Otherwise, people wouldn't bother, you know? So I would like to tell a story for you all tonight, and for the story, and for myself, in the interest of giving you an experience of what it might be like to be in a group and to be witnessing a dream being told. Dreams are really stories too. They're spontaneous, wild, seemingly nonsensical in a lot of cases, stories that arise from within us. Would you like to hear a story?
Sure.
Okay, good. All right. So as I'm telling this story, you can just sit back and allow the story to do what it wants to do in you. And you can also imagine that this is a dream that's being told. And as the story is being told, don't feel like you need to remember it all, you know, from beginning to end. Particularly what I'd like you to do is to notice what part stands out. Okay? And there might be more than one part. And when we're done, we'll have a few moments of silence so that you can sort of savor whatever it is that stands out to you about the story, and then we'll do some more. Okay? All right. So this is a dream story. It is a story about a dream. This story is called The Dream of Isaac, Isaac's Dream, which some of you may be familiar with. Once upon a time, that's what we say in soldier. And the soldier approached Isaac, a young man he was, and he said, "Old man, what can I do for you?" And Isaac said, "Well, sir, you see, my dream has told me to come here to this place, and I would very much like to visit your palace." The young soldier pulled a cigarette out of his pocket, lit it up, looked at Isaac, and blew smoke in his face, and he said, "Old man, old man, old man, don't you know, dreams are just meaningless drivel. After all, last night, I can give you an example. I had a dream in which a strange person came to me, and I told that strange person. I said, 'Old man, go home, dig behind your fireplace, pull the stone out from beneath the back, dig, and there you will find a golden treasure chest.' Can't you see, old man? Dreams are meaningless drivel." There, he pulled the stone out from behind his fireplace mantle, and he began to dig. That's what the old ones say. And if the old ones don't know, then I ask you, who does? So take a few moments. Thank you. Thank you. Take a few moments and just settle in a little bit to that and notice what part of the story stands out to you. Which part of the story do you find yourself in? Hear from some people about where you find yourself in the story, and this is really in the interest of giving you a sense of the kind of work that I do and that the communities that I'm a part of do when we share dreams. So whatever stands out to you, whatever has meaning for you, or whatever has feeling or emotion for you, where are people with the story? Yes?
I'm reminded of a book called Acres of Diamonds.
Uh-huh. Beggars of Diamonds?
Acres of Diamonds.
Acres of Diamonds. Okay,
and this guy is aware that his neighbors are discovering diamonds on their property. He wants to go find, travels around a lot, and loses everything, and comes back, and he's finding back in his own home and notices little shiny things in his own backyard. Finds he has acres of diamonds, and it makes me feel... like what I try to do with friends is ask them to make themselves into their business as opposed to going out and working for somebody else. Don't you know that you have, if you can manifest yourself, you can make a good business?
The diamonds are within.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Who else? I think you had your hand up. Yeah.
When you ended, I thought, well, why didn't the dream just tell him that in the first place? Why did he have to go all the way over there and go through all that hardship?
Yeah.
just to get that to go back. Yeah. You know, it would have been so much simpler if it given three dreams about the back of
right.
the fireplace.
Right.
You
yeah.
can tell that I yeah. find dreams often baffling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and before we hear from some more people, let me say something about that. It's true, dreams are baffling, and especially working with them alone, we tend to have more difficulty seeing what they're trying to come and tell us, in my experience. The reason that dreams do what they do, and I believe the story has done it as well, is that they have so much of such vast importance to tell us at any given moment in time that they're doing the best job that they can to communicate through symbolic and metaphoric language, which is the perfect kind of language because a symbol can hold many levels and many layers of meaning simultaneously, as can a metaphor. So the dreams are doing the best that they can to give us as much as they can at a given moment in time. And so I feel that, in a sense, you know, maybe it's also having to do with the experience of wholeness, that just like, from my view, for the rest of us, I'm not saying it's true for other people, I'm saying I think it's true based on my impressions, that it seems to me that in life, we have to go through some difficulties before we actually arrive at a point of finding that inner richness, at least. And it might also be a form of outer richness as well, and outer support. That's kind of what occurs to me when I hear you say that. Is that helpful?
Well, I hear what you say. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, it's still the idea that the dream couldn't have come more directly uh-huh. and told him that, why he had to go through so much. I guess part of that is because I'm going through a very hard time in my life
yeah.
in so many ways right now.
Yeah.
But it's just as if everything, it's to the point where I'm just, I laugh when one more thing goes directly wrong.
Uh-huh.
And and I say, well, I must be obviously good for practice of non-attachment.
Uh-huh.
There's one loss after another, after another, after another that seems to be coming from the outside.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it's why does life, I keep saying, you know, if you want me to know something, maybe there would be a more direct way to do it. And this uh-huh. dream, I guess, is the same thing. Uh-huh. Why did he have to go through that long and arduous journey just to be told to turn around and come back?
Right.
Why wasn't he told where to look in the first place?
I have something kind of odd, like to share, which is
yeah.
about the journey. If he was given the riches to begin with, who knows what he would have spent them on. But the fact that his soul went on this huge journey and he became wiser and he fell into a deeper place of trust within himself, then he was able to go back and receive the riches. He wasn't ready before then. So the journey itself is the actual goal for the soul, and then the treasure is just to have fun and spend it while he's on earth. That's what I hear.
That's what you see.
From
yeah.
the conversation
yeah.
you guys are having.
Yeah.
Thank
okay.
you.
Great.
Sure.
Yeah. So let's hear from some more people. Everything is valid. Whatever folks experience about or within the story is valid. And as we have the conversation, other things might occur to other people. Now, whatever is true for us as individuals is true for us as individuals, and it may or may not be of service to other people. So, for instance, if we were talking about a dream right now, and in a sense, as I presented it, we are, different things will occur to different people. And the benefit of doing this in a group is that more than one viewpoint will be represented, and more than one feeling can be represented, too. So I see people, like, putting their hands up. Let's hear from the back here. Yes, please.
Well, I felt a little upset about him traveling to find this answer.
Yeah.
And how it was probably painful and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
However, he found his answer, went back home as quickly as possible, and shared his wealth with everyone. He
uh-huh.
shared his, he opened the house
yeah.
for all his dreamers, for
yeah.
his family,
yeah.
which must be really rewarding
uh-huh.
for him.
Uh-huh.
That's how I felt about it.
Uh-huh.
To
uh-huh.
share that
yeah.
wisdom.
Yeah.
Going through that.
Yeah.
Long
path. So he through the suffering, then he gained
a right.
boon.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
That's
yeah. Yeah, I see that layer of, yeah. That's great.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Most definitely. Thank you. Okay, we'll go over here and then we'll go over there. Yes, please.
What I liked is that with his persistence, his stick-to-itiveness, his difficulty, was his flexibility in not actually achieving his goal of going into the palace, but his ability to turn around on a dime and say, oh, well, maybe this is what I need is flexibility. I don't need the persistence to be such a driving force that I can't see the forest for the trees. So it was that allowed him to that quality, not being stuck in his goal, was the key.
What was in that smoke?
Okay, this woman had her hand up and then we'll come over to Roy. Yes, please.
So to me, it's two words. It's work. You strive, you discipline yourself. I mean, you follow what's driving you. And then there's grace. So it's, to me, it's work, struggle, striving, and then grace, the gift.
Okay, thank you. So the things, the individual things that are occurring to people are at least true for the people who are noticing them. That, and that's how the projective work happens, is that whatever occurs to an individual, there's something vital and important about that part of the story for each of us, and it helps tell us where we're at in a very true sense. So we'll do Roy and then we'll go to Jim.
What's catching my attention about story is probably related to where I am in life, which is I'm faced with a very what feels like a very important decision about whether to bring kids into the world. And what I'm learning and what I'm taking away from the story is that it's not always, the answer doesn't always come clearly, neatly packaged, or necessarily through a dream. It sometimes pieces come in through a conversation with a friend in a waking dream, or some synchronicity that happens. And for me, the story is about, I think, similar to what you said, or at least my understanding of it. The willingness to go sometimes blindly towards the unknown, and trust that there is a wisdom that's grander than myself, an invisible hand that is so vast and so wise that I am a part of it, and really called to participate. And for me, that's the treasure.
That's the treasure. Okay. All right. Beautiful. Thank you. Jim?
When I was listening to the story, I was when the old man is at the castle and he meets the guard. You described the guard as young.
Yes.
But he was very cynical.
Yeah.
Very, and he actually blew smoke.
Right.
And that struck me. Sort of like, but he didn't get offended by that. Somehow he was open to what was happening in a larger sense.
Yeah.
And he didn't latch on to the young guard's like presentation. You know, like he just sort of bracketed that, or you know, I was very intrigued by that. It showed me where the old man had learned something already by the time he got to the castle. And he was able to hear, instead of like getting angry at being, you know, mistreated or dismissed or that sort of thing. That was very meaningful.
Yeah. Thank you. There's something for me in that too, and it was interesting to me how that the soldier became, as I was practicing the story and sitting with the story this week in preparation for the night, the soldier became more cynical and more kind of rude and dismissive of somebody who he could consider his elder, who had gone through all this suffering and who had gone all of this way, and who, in my version of the story, he's misunderstood. He's seen as kind of a raggedy guy from a strange place, but really, in my version of the story, the dream story, he's this amazing individual who has banked everything on going and following this dream. So much so that his shoes have worn through and his clothes have become threadbare and he feels like he's out of style, you know? And that's something that's inevitable, I think, you know, in Western life, that, you know, we will tend to eventually feel out of style, especially if we compare ourselves to young, fashionable people. And that's another reason, I think, why the soldier stood out to me as a youth or as a young person. There's a trickster-like wisdom in the story, too, around this one detail, in the sense that the soldier doesn't realize that he's actually... It's like paradox. It's backwards wisdom. He actually ends up helping Isaac out in a way that is totally unexpected. That probably, in my imagined version of things, when Isaac was wearing this trench in the ground and walking back and forth, that he was feeling, when I feel into imagining myself as Isaac, he was probably feeling like, shit, why didn't this dream tell me exactly, you know, why didn't, and that's why that other detail came out in the story as I was telling it, about that the dream didn't show him the bridge or the soldiers.
Yeah.
And so he got there, which was like one level of encouragement, but it was also kind of like a, you know, up yours, Isaac, because the dream didn't warn him about that, you know? And so then he's like, geez, I came all this way, I gave everything up, and now I can't even get to the palace. And there is something beautiful, and it's why we call it a wisdom story, in that moment where Isaac doesn't question, he doesn't get angry, he doesn't feel insulted. And this is the very specific medicine of the story. He says, without even having to argue with the young soldier and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, I think that dream is for me, and I'm going to go all the way home, and I'm going to find the treasure chest, you know, raspberries on you, cynical young guy. He just says, thank you, and he turns around and he acts on it. And this is a form of medicine that's in the story that, for me, it stands out as a moment exactly as Jim spoke about it, or as I heard Jim spoke about it, that he's saying, well, all I can really do is what I can do for myself, and given this information, I'm going to go and see what happens. So he's, in a sense, he's really taking charge of his own life, and in another sense, he's taking charge of his own inner gold. And we'll come to you in a sec. Another thing I want to say about the story, and this question that I hear you raising, it's kind of an age-old question. It's kind of like, I myself don't know of any guaranteed, perfectly successful path to happiness. I do feel that my culture has given me an expectation around that. It's even in the Constitution, right? Happiness, the pursuit of happiness. That's my right as an American, right? Well, I suspect something might be a little bit off there, at least in my imagined version of things, that if there was an easy path, I think one of us would have figured it out by now, and we would have gone and done it, and we would have told the rest of us about it, and we would just be having an easy time, and it would be like, hey, great, you know, life is great. How are you? Oh, I'm great. How are you? I'm great. But it would be kind of like going to the movies, right, and seeing a really great movie where everybody is just happy the whole time, right? Nobody goes to see movies like that, at least as far as I know. The movie starts out and the couple gets together and they're happy. And they get married and they're happy. And they have kids and the kids are happy. And everybody's happy. 2 hours of that? No thanks. Right? So this is just kind of my perhaps overly dramatic way of saying, I think it's just in the unwritten, invisible, small type in the contract of life that difficulties arise. At least that's the way I see it. And part of the medicine of the story is also to give an example of an individual who made a seemingly crazy bet on his dream, the dream of his life, he put his faith there, and in the end it worked out. Not because he became rich in the outer world and received a lot of power and accolades, because he found the inner gold inside his own home.
Right.
Yeah, just like you were saying at the beginning. Yeah. So what do we have over here?
I actually identified with the breadth of the journey. In the sense that this trajectory that we're invited to when we take shape in our bodies to bear witness on the things that we identify with, so treasure, and investing ourselves into pursuing a vision.
Yeah.
And yet when we are faced with a challenge, the soldiers, the moat, the guardedness of what keeps us apart from our vision, and going back and forth, wearing a synaptic rut.
Yeah, sure.
Feeling courage, disheartened, reinvigorating the dream and the resiliency of that to despondency and disappointment and the stretch and struggle.
Yeah.
And yet, in the end, we have to be humble and go and surrender to the guard, so to speak, and then bearing witness to, in the face of what we think is insurmountable challenge, in the heart of that is the key.
Uh-huh.
We take that back, and I think in the journey back, I was projecting that maybe some of the wisdom that was imparted in that humility was, this is too good to keep for myself.
Uh-huh.
And hence, the wisdom was, in the face of the challenge was the key. So coming together, meeting our challenge with our attachment to how things are supposed to look, and then building a chalice, a crucible for how we can overcome what we throw in our path that becomes the blockage to the key.
I love it.
So the dream house was the chalice in which we can give ourselves to finding in the heart of what we put in our path.
Right.
That's the path through.
Right. I have a lot of ahas around what I hear you saying. And it's almost as if, too, remember, the story says that Isaac lives in a village and he always lived there and nothing much unusual ever happened. And so it is as if he has to leave and go through all these strange adventures and put forth a lot of faith and a lot of energy in order to be able to then come back and to feel confident enough in his own inner riches to say, here's my lodge, come on in, this is what I've learned, dreams are worth banking on in more ways than one. Thank you for that. Any other insights, feelings?
Just that he didn't offer any resistance when he got to that guy. I was thinking about my own life, how I too have been going through a number of losses where I'm going, really? To just realizing that I make it more difficult by putting the resistance instead of just accepting, okay, this soldier just told me that there's gold here and I need to go back on this journey, that I complicate things by putting up roadblocks instead of just being in acceptance that I've just been told what I needed to really know and really trusting that really going to that place where I can really know that I can trust that.
Yeah, it could be easy to miss, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If I'm imagining myself as Isaac, I've gone through all this stuff, and then I get there, and there's a bridge. Damn it, and there's soldiers,
right.
And he's blowing smoke in my face. I could miss the important information about what the way he gives me, almost by accident or mistakenly, the very thing that I need.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
I think of that wonderful Shakespeare line, the uses of adversity. I mean, you get smoke blown in your face and say, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think that, again, the reason that the story has been told and retold so many times is because it has this sort of very universal message that can also be applied personally, just like with the work that we do with dreams. The reason the story has survived is because it really does describe something that's universally human. And I don't know how long this story has been told, But I believe this story arises from the Middle East. I'd have to do some research on that. I see the nodding of a head. Yeah. And the Middle East is a very old
Jewish.
An old Jewish story. Exactly. Yeah. That's a very old culture. So this story has survived for a long time and been of use to many people through many different economic crashes, through many different economic heydays, and so forth. So I truly hope that the story is of some use to you as you go on your way from our time together tonight. Now I want to open it up.
Well, Jeff, you had another hand up.
Did I? Oh.
Oh, I just...
Thank you.
I just had a couple short
Yeah, comments. please.
One was that what really occurred to me is there's also this... I mean, who's to say that this this soldier isn't, like, basically himself? He's encountering, like, youth is encountering old age,
yeah.
And vice versa. So
there
is that element, because that's what he was like. And who knows, that you know, they say time has passed, you know, but who knows, maybe decades passed before he set out on the dream.
Yeah.
So in a sense...
Beautiful.
So you have that. The other thing, you know, in terms of, like, you kind of mentioned, like, you know, the modern culture and the, you know, the Constitution and the pursuit of happiness, and how there's sort of this sense that, like, we're entitled to a life of happiness, you know, and prosperity and all this great, wonderful stuff is just going to rain down from the sky. You know, we just manifest the vision for it there. But yet, if we look at sort of the Western culture, we've got this, like, two-pronged approach, you know. It's either, like, rosy-colored spectacles or just, like, complete nihilism. Both are kind of tempting depending on your personality and depending on your circumstances.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is about all these stories, you know, fairy tales, wisdom stories, all that kind of stuff, they don't promote either view.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
They promote something very different, and it's hard to put your finger on exactly what that is.
Right.
But it's something that you only gradually sort of start to get a sense of it over your life.
Yeah.
You don't, like...
Right.
It's not something that happens overnight, you know. There's sort of like a ripening process, and you gradually get little hints of something, and it's like, wow, suddenly that makes more sense than it did 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. So, well said. Thank you very much for that. Yeah, and this is also true of dreams and dreaming in my experience, that there's a... In the story, like some of our dreams, it appears pretty simple and straightforward. In a certain sense, you know, it has a logical progression and things happen, and, you know, it could, like a lot of fairy tales, it could be seen as, like, well, kind of childish or elementary or primary, and yet when we view it from a symbolic level of understanding or a metaphoric level of understanding, then we can come back to this story at different times. And this story has been very pertinent to me over the last 5 years as I've really deepened into my vocational path. And I think it's part of the reason that this story chose me tonight, to tell the story tonight. There's just a lot of resonance there about the importance. And the other thing that I hear John saying, stories, myths, fairy tales, and dreams are not about right or wrong. They're about right or left. Forwards or backwards. Up or down. So it gets us out of this polarized place that we seem to exist with in this culture, you know. And I could just name a few of the polarities: Republicans, Democrats, Coke, Pepsi, left, right, man, woman. We live with a lot of polarities, and I think John spoke to it really well. Thank you for that. So I looked down at my watch and I realized that we're moving a little bit over what I had intended. If there are any burning questions about dreams and dreaming, I want to just create a short space for that here at the end. Is there any question that you'd like to ask? Curiosities?
Yeah. In relation to sleep and the patterns of sleep.
Yeah.
I somehow have the understanding, and I don't remember where I read this or became acquainted with it, but at some point the body is immobile.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Is that?
Yes, there's a chemical that's released in the brain under proper circumstances that stops us from moving while we're asleep, because we're actually moving in our dreams.
The brain can can interpret that as, oh my God, you know, I can't move, I'm scared.
Yeah.
It can be very, very frightening.
Yes, we call this sleep paralysis.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And it's helpful to know that it happens. And it's helpful to know why it's happening. It happened to me quite a bit as a child. The experience of sleep paralysis, just as I've heard you describe it, a person's falling asleep and then suddenly, or waking up, and suddenly feels, oh my God, I can't move. I want to, I need to, I can't move. My body is not functioning, and it can be very terrifying.
Right.
But the helpful thing to know is that that's as the result of a chemical that's released in our brains as we sleep that prevents us from doing unhelpful things like running across the room while we're asleep. Yeah, or acting out. You know, if I'm having an action adventure dream, the last thing I want to do is be physically acting it out as I'm asleep. And so there's the opposite disorder where people don't have, for whatever reason, enough of that chemical. And those are the stories that we hear about in the news from time to time where people act out violent crimes while they're asleep and hurt their partners. And, you know, this is something that we want to avoid. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Very welcome. Well, unless there are any other burning questions or comments, you all have been very gracious this evening. And you can always contact me by email. If you want to give me your email because you want to find out about my offerings and my work, you can do that in my book here. I have an article that I wrote about shamanism, sound, and dreams over here. You're welcome. There's like 5 copies. If you'd like a copy of that, you're welcome to take it. And I also have some flyers about my work that I would like you to take if you have an interest. My partner and I, Marty, who is helping tonight with the filming over here, we'll be doing a workshop called Creating from Within, which involves a practice known as soul painting, where we basically dream while we're awake and we put our dreams onto the page. And this can be a very emotional and feeling-oriented experience. And we're doing that on April 26th. Here's the flyer for that. And then I also lead local groups, as I've said, and I also do individual one-on-one sessions with folks. I love doing both. And I also lead ongoing online video dream groups for people around the United States and also from around the globe. So that information is on this sheet here, and if you'd like to find out more about my work or just to keep in touch with me, please grab one of these on your way out. And I also do have, I didn't play much music tonight, I played the drum. I also have this sound healing CD with me, which features one of my primary instruments, the didgeridoo. And this is really good music for creating a dreaming awareness. So people like to listen to this before they go to sleep at night. It's very relaxing, it's very healing, and it can really create a trance space in which we can receive dreams if we're looking for guidance and for relaxation and for healing. So I think that's enough, huh?
Are you not going to play the didgeridoo?
I would like to play the didgeridoo. Let me do a closing sound blessing. And I'll play the didgeridoo because I've had a request for it, and I can't turn down a request. This particular didgeridoo is made out of pine, and pine is a very resonant wood. And I think what I'd like to do is, my thought originally was to play the didgeridoo as a prayer of thanksgiving to you all for being here tonight and for giving your warm, kind, and attentive care to the evening. And also, this is a blessing for receiving dreams, and that's another part of the work that I do. I do dream incubation, where I help people to develop the awareness and the intention around having certain kinds of dreams. And again, this is a very old practice. We know that people in Ireland did this, we know that people in Greece did this, mm-hmm. that it involved music and it involved asking for certain kinds of dreams. So I will play the didgeridoo for a short time to close our evening together. If you'd like, you can close your eyes and take some breaths, and I suggest it's good to have both feet flat on the ground. And if you're looking for a particular dream, you can ask for that dream while you're receiving the music. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for the experience of the evening, and I would love to hear from any of you afterwards if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question. Mm-hmm. And I would love to have you come and check out a group sometime if that interests you. And I also want to thank Rob and Jim, and Rob has some other things to say. Thank you guys for having me here one more time.
So don't forget the CDs here, and check out other books here sitting over there. We have a donation bowl over on the counter. We encourage you to contribute to it, which the proceeds of which we share with our speakers to further their work, and also retain half to support the recreation of this space every week. So thank you so much.
Very welcome.
And thank you all for coming tonight. We look forward to seeing you.
Thanks, folks.
Thank you for what you said. I have a daughter, she and her husband are in the theater, and they think a dog is a responsibility. You want to get a kid.
Of course,
I'll
make a decision. What do you do?
It's a wonderful
evening.
Great. Excellent.
Okay.
Yeah. Please.
Please.
Yeah. 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 Fascinating evening. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure. Thank you.
Situation, yeah. The opposite of what you were just talking about at the end, where I felt my dreams.
Right, right.
But luckily I'm not murdering anybody in the future, running across the room.
Yeah, we have one woman that's been coming to the group for about 4 years who has gone through the process of discovering that that's what she's dealing with.
It's a precursor to the illness. It happens like losing your sense of smell. So there's certain things there you wouldn't think are tied to it, but they absolutely are.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. Great to have you. Great to have you.
Can I have one of your CDs?
Yes,
or
of course.
You
go ahead and pay the guys up front.
How much are they?
I have that.
Do you? Did
yes,
you get
I
it
do.
At a previous talk?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I have it, and
okay.
I like it very much.
Oh, good. Oh, good. That's
yes,
good to
I
hear.
Yes, I listen to it. Okay. I do sometimes in the afternoon. Sure. I wasn't. My husband was still living.
Yeah.
Okay. I would go to the back, and I would play that six chorus box.
Oh.
That was such a wonderful change.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
And thank you for what you said about the fact that if life were not a journey, it wouldn't have been interesting.
Yeah.
That was a big help.
Oh, good. 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 Thank you for what you said. You know, it's valuable. It's valuable to recognize when we are having that experience. We each have it in our own way on a certain level. But it really was very meaningful that we shared that. So thank you. I appreciate the courage to just speak that experience.
When you were here